Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Kathy Kay, and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Wednesday, February 21st, 2024, and we are reading from the Big Book on page 5 of Bill's story, the first paragraph. Today's readers are Jeannie N., reading the 12 Steps, Susan G., reading the 12 Traditions, and reading the text are Jody E. and Alex K. The reference number for yesterday's 10 a.m. Eastern meeting is 21,152 or 21152. And the reference number for this morning's 7 a.m. Eastern meeting is 21,158 or 221158. Our newcomer greeter today is Lois P., and making announcements hopefully will be Robin P. Thank you all. Our sole purpose. Always, fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose. Oh, wait, I'm sorry, I forgot a paragraph. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors, and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition, states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Jeannie N. to read the 12 steps of OA. Good morning, Jeannie. Press star 1, Jeannie, to unmute.
Sorry. Hi, everyone. Great to be here. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. 1, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings, made a list of all persons we had harmed, and became willing to make amends for all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you, everyone, for letting me do service. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Jeannie N. And would Susan G. please read the 12 traditions? Good morning,
Thank you, Kathy. Thank you. Oh, good morning, everyone.
Sorry,
Susan
this
G.
is Deb. I got. So, Kathy, you want to go on? This is Deb. I was late.
Yeah, why don't we go on, Deb?
Thank
I'm
you.
Okay. Go ahead, Susan.
Okay. Susan, recovered compulsive overeater in Los Angeles, California. The 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA, as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. And 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you, Kathy.
Thanks so much, Susan G. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that we keep our share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinent requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute, and once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass. Then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book on page 5 of Bill's story, the first full paragraph. I will ask Jody E. to get us started. Good morning, Jody.
Good morning, Kathy. Good morning, everyone. This is Jody E., so very gratefully recovered in California. Liquor ceased to be a luxury. It became a necessity. Bathtub gin, 2 bottles a day, and often 3, got to be routine. Sometimes a small deal would net a few $100s, and I would pay my bills at the bars and delicatessens. This went on endlessly, and I began to waken very early in the morning, shaking violently. A tumbler full of gin, followed by 6 bottles of beer, would be required if I were to eat any breakfast. Nevertheless, I still thought I could control the situation. and there were periods of sobriety which renewed my wife's hope. Oh my. My disease, I would say, doesn't quite equal this bottom. Nevertheless, I did become dependent on my alcoholic foods at times, really all the time. Sometimes I was seriously in the food, and my health suffered. My relationship with my husband surely suffered, and probably with my daughter as well, although that was less obvious. I would become completely obsessed with what I was going to eat, what form it was going to take this time, my alcoholic ingredients. Were they going to be savory? Were they going to be sweet on this particular binge? How was I going to get time alone to eat it? I would go to bed at night with my husband, pretend to fall asleep. And then when I thought he was asleep, I'd get up and go down to the kitchen and binge. Sometimes he would wake up and come down and look at me with such disgust. It was really sad. It was really unpleasant for both of us. Did I still think I could control the situation? Not really. I knew I was out of control. Now, in program, there were periods of abstinence, which renewed my hope. Not so much my husband's hope, but my hope. And naturally, they would. But the question is, am I just abstinent or am I recovered? There is a difference. There is a difference for me today. And with that, my time is up and I'll pass.
Thank you, Judy E. Okay, thank you for getting us started. I'd like to take names of those who would like to share. And I'm going to ask that if you shared in the last couple of days, you wait and give others an opportunity to share first.
Okay. Janelle T.
Freya H.
Janelle, wait a second.
Laura
Janelle,
W.
Janelle T. Laura H.
Laura W.
Freya. Freya H.
Freya H. Thanks.
It was Laura
Julie
W.
B.
Julie E.
Julie B.
Julie.
Thank you.
Oh, Julie B.
Teresa C.
Teresa C.
Sarah G.
Sarah G. Anyone else?
Your slippers.
Okay, so I have Janelle T., Laura W., Freya H., Julie E. B., Teresa C., and Sarah G. So let's be, everyone should mute themselves again, except for Janelle T. Please go ahead, Janelle.
Hi, thank you so much, Kathy. This is Janelle T. in Washington State. Grateful compulsive eater. I get to live in recovery today by the grace of God. I'm not sure that luxury existed for Bill with alcohol. I don't know. It's not up to me. But I'm pretty confident it didn't exist for me. It just didn't show on my body for really the first 28 years of my life. And people are like, oh, you can't relate then. Well, guess what? I was miserable. Guess what? It wasn't a luxury for me whatsoever. I didn't always have access to my alcoholic foods when I was growing up. But the moment I really did, it started. And, you know, I found some other behaviors, like exercising like a maniac in order to stave off the weight gain, because it was all about weight, right? Never mind the fact that the shakes were such a regular part of my existence, passing out at times because I hadn't eaten for so long. And when I did eat, it was something sugary. And so I fainted. It was a pretty bad scene. And I knew there was something wrong with me and others who knew me well knew there was something wrong with me, but I didn't know what it was. They couldn't look at me and say, well, obviously, you eat too much. I ate like a maniac, too. I ate my alcoholic foods whenever I could, as much as I could, just to stuff away the feelings. I didn't even know that's what I was doing, but that's what I was doing. I was stuffing away any feelings that I didn't know how to feel, which is pretty much any feeling. It could be a great feeling. It could be what I considered a terrible feeling. You'd think I was going to die from it. And as far as the shakes, my sugar crashes, highs and lows, the roller coaster I was riding. Gosh, I mean, to get abstinent finally last year, at the beginning of the year, and feel the difference of what it is to live without those highs and lows, I can't even tell you. Of course, abstinence of itself wasn't enough. I was tooth and nail through that period until I got to experience recovery because of a spiritual awakening, because of working these steps and God doing all the rest. But I'll tell you, I wouldn't trade this life. I'm not going to forget what it felt like to have food be my master. So grateful that God is my true master, and it's a totally different life for me, and I thank you, and with that, I pass.
Thanks very much, Chanel T. Laura W., please share with us.
Thanks, Kathy. Good morning, everyone. This is Laura W., a recovered compulsive eater, anorexic and exercise bulimic in South Jersey. Yeah, liquor ceased to be a luxury. It became a necessity. You know, without spiritual help and without recovery from my illness, I can't not do what I did in my illness. I can't not pick up. I can't not purge on exercise. I can't not do the things that were killing me because I have a disease. I have an illness. And, bathtub gin, in the beginning, he was on the golf course trying to catch up with Walter Hagen, drinking probably top shelf liquor. And now he's drinking bathtub gin. And boy, I can really identify with that. You know, my anorexic foods were fat-free, sugar-free, anything. And I used to, spend a lot of money on the good stuff, the expensive stuff. And then, toward the end, it was just how much can I get for the cheapest amount? And, it got to be routine. The progressiveness of his illness, the progressiveness of my illness, I started off with a little of this and a little of that. And the next thing I know, it's like I had stuff stashed in the back of freezers, in my room, in my car, it went on endlessly, it says. There is no end to this disease unless we get spiritual help. And for me, it wasn't the fact that I wanted recovery. It was the fact that I couldn't take it anymore. I just couldn't take the misery and the physical and emotional pain it was causing. And sorry, that was my dog. still, he said, I can control the situation. There's the behavior. The first one is the drive to be a victim, the drive to control, the drive to be right, and the drive to deny. And he was having all of those drives. He wanted to be right. He wanted to control it. He was denying the situation. And before God saved me from this terrible illness, that's how I felt. I felt like I could do it all myself. And today, I'm grateful not to be able to do it myself. I'm grateful to be free and to let go and to say, I don't know. I need help. I don't know. And that's strength. There's strength in that for me. So grateful for this meeting. So grateful for Bill, what he went through, so that we could be all here together today. Thanks for letting me share. I pass.
Thank you, Laura W. Freya H., please share with us.
Thank you so much. Freya H., recovered food addict, compulsive eater, restrictor, bulimic in Colorado. Thanks, everybody, for this great shares. What I relate to most in this paragraph is actually the time of my life when I had come into program and I was desperately trying to do this thing myself. Like I was trying to, I thought, okay, I'm going to control the food. So for me, it's like exercise and controlling my food ceased to be a luxury or a healthy life-sustaining choice, and it became a necessity. You know, I thought, okay, this is how I'm going to fix myself. I'm going to, you know, this 12-step program tells me, I didn't really understand what a 12-step program was, but I heard the food plan. I'm like, okay, I'm supposed to do this food plan, and, you know, I'm supposed to not eat certain things, so that's what's going to keep me okay. And, you know, when in doubt, leave it out and be really restrictive and controlling with your food. And I thought that's what my goal was. So I was relying on that as if it were, you know, what I'm supposed to be doing. So so I can relate to the just the hopelessness of like, I'm trying so hard and I have this sense that I'm down for the count. You know, nevertheless, I still thought that I could control the situation. And there were periods of normalcy, which did, you know, they renewed my hope in myself. And it took that experience of, you know, like really getting like, oh, controlling the food is not, doesn't equal, you know, recovery, because the pink cloud, once it wears off, it was like, oh, this is actually, you know, I felt better. And then because I didn't, you know, get into the spiritual part, I felt so much worse, you know, just like, this is so bleak. It doesn't even matter, you know, it doesn't even matter what my weight is. I just feel so empty and isolated. And the sentence at the very top of the page, I became an unwelcome hanger on it. Just being in that place of like, oh, like I used to be, you know, the person who was admired and, you know, people sought my advice. And now I'm just this unwelcome person. And that really is how I felt as well. It's just like, I don't know who I am in the rooms or out of the rooms. And it really prompted me to seek this deeper spiritual solution beyond, you know, beyond the food. And so I'm super grateful for that. And I will pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Freya H. Julie E.B., please share with us.
Thank you. Good morning. This is Julie B. from Ohio. I'm very grateful to be on the line this morning. And this is such a wonderful paragraph. I know this is a favorite among fellow OAers, so it's wonderful to share. And I was actually thinking to share on the sort of what Bill's story was out of the rooms, out of recovery, and what my story is in recovery. Liquor ceased to be a luxury, became a necessity. That's what his was out of recovery. And mine, that ceases to be a luxury, is outreach and meditation. If I don't have those things in my life, I don't function. I don't have good relationships. I don't have good reactions. Bill's story out of recovery, bathtub gin. And I relate to in recovery, bathtub recordings, just meaning that when I am getting ready for the day or I'm showering, I'm listening to previous recordings. I'm listening to the assets that are available to us in this program and online and even on this specific meeting. He would awaken early in the morning, shaking violently outside of recovery. And in recovery, I awaken early to talk with God, to tell him thank you. I set a timer and I say thank you to him as many times as I can within that timer. I also have started to have a song that I listen to and just think of him. And it's such a lovely, fun practice. Bill's story outside of recovery is that he had a half a dozen beers and a tumbler full of gin would be required to eat breakfast. And my requirement to eat breakfast in recovery is weighing a half dozen ounces of healthy fruit and a prayer of gratitude and asking that the food in front of me be free from addiction and that it free me from addiction into recovery and for the strength to do his will. And I thank you, fellow OAer, for that beautiful prayer that I get to say at the beginning of every meal that allows me to be in recovery and not addiction. To the newcomer and to the old timer, I just want to say that you are on an ocean liner. We all were in the ocean before. We were drowning And I just want to encourage you to stay on the ship and to do the steps and to not jump off of this ship. Never go back. Thank you for letting me share. Julie B. from Ohio.
Thank you, Julie B. Sorry I got your initials wrong before. It's Julie B. from Ohio. Teresa C., please share with us.
Hi, this is Teresa C. I am a compulsive overeater and food addict in New Jersey. When we read this paragraph, it just, you know, took me back to a time and just makes me grateful that I'm not there anymore. You know, a time when my disease had progressed and I just was in the middle of it and didn't even know what was going on. I just know now when I look back at it that it really was just focused on the food. I think about, you know, going to work and we had accessible to us, you know, breakfast there where I worked. And so it was the first, like, you know, get up, didn't even care about making something at home, just had something there. And then lunch was provided. And then I wasn't thinking about really my work, just thinking about that. And then, you know, in between, other foods were available. And then afterwards, my routine of the whole thing was I stayed late at work, but then I would go straight to the diner and, you know, get a full dinner with dessert, no problem, and go home. And don't even remember at home if there was food there too, but no, went back, got up, did the same thing over again. That was just my focus. And when I think now to where I am, because of the 12 steps and the big book and recovery and visions for you, you know, I plan my food and I plan my food. And then the rest of the time, other than get preparing and eating, it's really focused on, you know, some very either productive or relaxing. And I take relaxing to also be productive because I need to rejuvenate sometimes too. So all that together, and what a better life it is now. And that's what I have to share today. So thank you for letting me share. I'll pass.
Thank you, Teresa T. Sarah G., please share with us.
Hi, this is Sarah G. Thank you so much. I'm so grateful for this program. I have been in and out of the rooms for a bit, and you know, with my last relapse, it came to a point where I didn't even have that pause to think, like, should I eat this or shouldn't I? And it just was so, it showed me how, as it says, that this disease is progressive. And I'm so, so grateful to be in program. I have a good fear, you know, in the sense of that I don't want to lose this. I don't want to lose what I have now. And I don't have to think about tomorrow or years from now, because I would love to have years of recovery. I have today. And if I know that I have today, then I will appreciate the quality of today. And I'll be fully present, you know, or as much as I can be, with God's help. And thank you. Thank you for letting me share. And I pass.
Thank you, Sarah T. Okay, it is time to take another list of people who would like to share. And please remember, if you shared in the last 2 days, that you refrain from sharing so others can have a chance. Who would like to share?
Wendy B.
Wendy
Betsy
B.
H. Alex K.
Okay, And is that a Wendy H. also?
Betsy H.
Betsy H. Sorry, Betsy. Alex K. Okay. Who else? Okay, why don't we go with these three names and then we'll see if anyone else wants to share. Wendy B., please share with us.
Good morning. This is Wendy B., recovered in Arizona. And this paragraph is just such a clear picture of the progression of our addiction. He was recognizing his dependency. He could no longer take it or leave it alone. He lost his power to choose. His drinking was dominating him, and it was a vital necessity for him to get through each day. And he couldn't prioritize other things or other people above it. Instead of his income going to pay bills or to pay rent, he shirked that responsibility of being a good provider, and he used his income to pay for things that facilitated his drinking, like the bar tab. And he still had periods of sobriety, so he thought he was still in control, even though he couldn't stay sober. The alcohol helped him stay in denial of how low he had come. It numbed him, so he didn't have to face the disappointments, and failings of his career choice, that was supposed to make him rich and famous, he still wasn't ready to face reality. And, it takes us addict types a long time before we become willing to face reality, to face the losses and to work through, to work through the losses to acceptance. And, God gives us a willingness to embrace truth, in our core being, when we ask him. And he opens our eyes to the damage we caused by our excesses. And he gave us this beautiful program, as a method of making things right with ourselves and with God and with others. And I'm just so grateful. And thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Wendy B. Betsy H., please share with us.
Hi, my name is Betsy H., recovered compulsive reader in California. And yeah, this is an interesting paragraph about liquor ceased to be a luxury. And I experienced this because I felt that I had to have this food, that just things would not be okay if I didn't have my food, my binge foods, that I felt like I couldn't face the day. I couldn't face anything. And I also, once I put down some of my biggest binge foods, I started to get really addicted to caffeine because I would just drink caffeine. And so then I felt like, oh, I don't have enough energy if I don't have this caffeine. I must have this. Well, it turned out when I became willing to put down my killer foods and the caffeine, I ended up having more energy. So my brain was telling me something that wasn't true. And in this paragraph also it talks about how Bill would sometimes get some money and he would pay his bills at the bars and delicatessens. And it doesn't say, and I would help my wife who was trying to support the family, on a low paying job. And it just reminded me of my own selfishness, of how I would just go to any lengths to get my binge foods and just get things for myself, but I wasn't there for my family or other people. And now I'd like to make an apology to the group, because yesterday I was supposed to do the announcements. And and let me tell you what happened. For some reason, my best thinking told me that I should step away from the meeting and go talk to my husband about our taxes. I'd end up yelling at him and berating him. I'm being very disrespectful, trying to get him to do certain things to fix our tax situation. I missed the service I was supposed to be doing, and I was supposed to be getting ready for work. And so afterward, I thought, like, oh, my God, what happened here? I was so positive. And then all of a sudden, my thinking got so out of whack. Like, it felt like like the best idea in the world to just be yelling at him when I needed to be on my meeting. And it's counterproductive anyway. So I made amends. But then I was telling an OA about it, and she laughed so hard because she thought, oh, you know, she said, oh, I wouldn't even think you would do that. And it just made me think, you know, I'm really a work in progress, and I don't want to give the impression that everything's so easy. I'm going to keep coming back. Thank you.
Thank you, Betsy H. Alex K., please share with us.
Thank you, Kathy. Thanks, everyone, for being here. Alex K. in California, compulsive eater, recovered just for today. Oh, this shows the progression of the disease, and my disease got worse and worse and took over more and more of my life. And yet, I thought I could control it. That's part of the disease, the delusion that I'm in control, that it's my choice to binge, and I'll be able to easily choose the next day to be absent, as if it was that simple. Of course, it never happened that way. But I kept believing that lie of the disease over and over. This time I'll be able to control it. And the disease could convince me that it was the best idea ever to stuff myself with large quantities of my binge foods that made me sick and crazy, or to starve myself all day and deprive my body of fuel and nutrition. And when I was somehow able to be abstinent for a week or even a day, that gave me false hope. And then another delusion would take over my brain, telling me that having been abstinent for that period of time, I could now eat like a normal eater. I could have just a bite of my binge food without a problem. I could be in control. But I found that I couldn't over and over. And again, I kept trying anyway. And I'm powerless over this thinking, but with the help of this program and the steps and my higher power, my thinking truly gets transformed so that hurting myself with food doesn't occur to me as an option. Such a miracle. I'm so grateful. I feel like I've been rescued from that vicious cycle of pain and misery and chaos. And I have peace with food. I'm free of the food obsession and compulsion for today. What a relief. Thanks, everyone. Pass.
Thank you very much, Alex K. Okay, I think we have time for three more shares. Who would like to share?
Ann A., New York.
Ann A., thank you, Ann. Who else?
Maria C. in California.
Maria. Okay, and one more?
Anna S.
Okay. Right. Thank you all. Let's begin with Ann A. from New York. Good morning, Ann.
Good morning, Kathy. Thank you so much. And thank you, everyone, for being here. Liquor ceased to be a luxury, became a necessity. For me, compulsive overeating became a necessity, I would say, all my life. But when I could afford it, I could indulge more, and that was in the high school years. And, you know, my husband never said anything about my yo-yoing. But one time he said, when I was asking him, where are we going to eat? It was always the weekend. He said, Ann, you always think about food. And, you know, I couldn't admit it to him, but he was dead right. And why did I overeat? Why I've been lonely. I had a hole in my soul. I ate because we weren't close. I ate. I wanted security. I wanted emotional support. I wanted. Well, now that I know I needed these basic things, and the basic thing I always needed was to feel, be loved. And I'm so grateful that because of my recovery, the past 45 months, I have this relationship with my higher power who loves me, who felt at 65 I needed rescuing, who gave me this gift that I am just so grateful for. And I'm just so grateful for all of you. And with that, I pass. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Anna and A. And Maria C. from California, please share with us.
Hi, everyone. This is Maria C. Good morning. I'm on kind of a rickety bus, so I apologize for background noise. I just wanted to share. Is it okay? Is this too loud? Okay, I'll keep going. I really identify with this passage and the delicatessens, of course, the first time through. I always knew when I read this passage that for me it referred to compulsive overeating, to food, the excess food being not a luxury but a necessity. And, you know, about a year ago I started taking programs seriously and started going through the steps using the big book. And that was when I saw one of the reasons I hit rock bottom was the credit card debt. I still have $10,000 in credit card debt from spending money on food. So this paragraph was especially sobering for me because I was really able to see just how like Bill I was, even though our substances were different. So again, I apologize for the noise. Thank you guys. Thank you everyone for being of service. And I pass.
Thank you, Maria C. And Anne S., please share with us.
Hi, this is Anne S. Thank you for your service, Kathy. Thank you for all the shares today. Liquor ceased to be a luxury food for me. You know, yeah, I started earlier and earlier in the day, and it got to the point that I would eat and not even want to be eating. Like, I would just, the food would be calling me, and I'd be like, I don't even want this now, but then I would go get it. It just took over my mind, my life. I would go to the bank and take out money and buy my binge foods and go home and hide them. And sometimes my husband would say, like, didn't you just go to the ATM yesterday? You know, what is, you know, and I'd be like, just mind your business. You know, terrible, the money that I spent on food and the lying. So, you know, until I conceded to my innermost self, that was the line that really got me, because the other thing was I would compare all the time. Well, you know, everybody around me could eat. Look at them eating, and they don't seem to have a problem, or if they have a problem, they, you know, just comparing all the time. So today I am just so grateful that, you know, I did concede to my innermost self that I, you know, I'm a compulsive overeater, and it doesn't matter who around me is one or not. I know who I am, and that's with God's help every day. And He has shown me that I am who I am, and it's okay, and He's going to help me, and and I give it to Him, and I think that's it. So, thanks.
Thank you, Anne S. Okay, we actually have time for one more share. Would anyone like
Amy
to...
W.
Okay, Amy W., it's yours.
Good morning. Amy W. in California, recovered for today. I just want to take this minute to thank everybody that does the work that we do in this program. Almost 30 years in program, but yesterday, because a gift of this program, I celebrated 36 years of marriage. And the blessing is that before I got married that time, my best idea was to be married four times by the time I was 30. And a little bit after 30, about 36-ish years old, I came into program, and it not only saved my life, but it saved my marriage. It saved relationships. It just, and I want to thank God for choosing me to live this way. I'm just so grateful. And if you're new, please keep coming back. Please keep coming back. My food was never perfect until I got to Vision, and that was about 25 years. So I'm telling you, just keep coming back, and you'll get your miracle. And I pass.
Thank you so much, Amy W. Would anyone like to take a one-minute share? Okay, then we will close the meeting. Let's see. We will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164 and follow that with the Serenity Prayer. Would Alex K. please read A Vision for You? Our book is meant to be suggestive only.
Thank you, Kathy. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit. And you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.